Hello and welcome. This is Final Draft on 2SER 107.3. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Andrew Popel, and every week I get to guide you through books, writing, and literary culture. Final Draft is all about Australian letters. It is about the stories that make us who we are. And no less so today, I have two fantastic new novels from important Australian writers. First up on the show, Christos Tsolkas. He's been longlisted for the Booker Prize, the Miles Franklin. His works like The Slap and Barracuda have been made into hit TV series. You will know his work, and he has a new book out. It is called Damascus. Damascus takes us back 2,000 years and imagines us into the life of Saul, the man who on the road to Damascus would come to be known as Paul. And I think anyone who's ever been to church in their life will know this story. Christos helps us reimagine it, and well, I'm going to let him tell you about it, but it is incredible. Later on in the show, I am joined by Anna Crean. Anna is a journalist. She's an essayist. She's written books about the fight to save Tasmania's rainforests. And she is joining us with her first novel. It is called Act of Grace, and it explores three contemporary stories across Australia that intertwine and show us a little bit of who we are. This is why I do this show. I'm a bit excited, if you haven't noticed, because these are two terrific books to share. Thank you so much, everyone who is a Final Draft listener. If you would like more of any of our conversations, don't forget the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast is available. It goes up every week after the show with long-form conversations and more of the books that you love. Now, I am coming up with Christos Tsolkas and Anna Crean on today's show. Stay tuned. It's all after this short break.
Hi, I'm Paul Gough. Won't you join me each Saturday on 2SERFM at midday? I've got a brand new show that sparkles and shines with jangly indie pop goodness. Everything from the 12-string bliss of the Birds to the three-guitar attack of Rolling Blackout Coastal Fever chimes will connect the dots between the essential music of now and what came before, the inspiration for those Rickenbackers ringing. That's Chimes every Saturday at midday on 2SER 107.3, stories, ideas, music.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, books, writing, and literary culture. Now, my name's Andrew Popel, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome Christos Tsolkas to the studio. Christos is an author, a playwright, an essayist. His novels include Loaded, Barracuda, and The Slap, for which he received Booker and Miles Franklin listings. And today, Christos is joining me to discuss his latest novel, Damascus. Welcome, Christos.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It's a real pleasure.
It is a pleasure, and I can't wait to get into this book, because Damascus tells the story of Saul of Tarsus. Saul was a Greek-speaking Jew, a tent maker, who some 2,000 years ago was met on the road to Damascus by a blinding light and was convinced that he must bring the teachings of the Jewish prophet Jesus to the world. This is a story that's perhaps well known to many, while others may not have encountered this tent maker whose letters came to spread Christianity around the world. And that's where I kind of want to start, because I know this is a narrative, it's a worldview that you were raised in, Christos, as was I. But I've also had it highlighted recently that this is not a story everyone knows or understands. So religion, I see through pop culture, phenomenon like The Good Place, Fleabag, Derry Girls, even Kanye West's new album, that there's this enormous popular consciousness and discussion about the Christian religion. The Bible in Australia, a historical work recently won at the Prime Minister's Literary Awards. And then, of course, there is the ongoing discussion of the Catholic Church and their attempts to reckon with an ongoing history of abuse. What do you make of this broader discussion? And does Damascus in any way intersect with the conversation?
I think it's inevitable that the novel does intersect with that conversation, simply because I was writing it under the shadow of everything that you've just described and talked about. But it is also a particular grappling with, an attempt by myself to come to terms with this, with Saul, that was his Jewish name, Paul is his, Bavlos was his Greek name, to come to terms with a series of ideas and ethics that I was raised with as an Orthodox Christian. And I think it's important to kind of frame it in the beginning in that sense, because Orthodoxy is the Eastern Church, and so it has a slight variations to what was happening in Catholicism, and certainly what happened with Protestantism. you know, a long time after the death of this prophet called Jesus. My first encounter with Paul was when I moved in high schools, moved from a very inner city migrant school to a very Anglo outer suburban school, and I fell in with some evangelical Christians who were good people. But what happened was I encountered Paul, and I encountered him through Corinthians 1, where he says, if your, you know, homosexuality is bars you from the kingdom of heaven, or more important, as a young 13-year-old, to be told that it bars you from God's love. And I couldn't read Paul. I couldn't read beyond that line. And then years later, I went into a church at a point of real despair, I think is the right word, in my life, and confusion. We all want paths, right? And that leads to that road to Damascus moment. And I found myself falling into prayer and reading the New Testament there in the church, sobbing, but also finding this incredible relief in the ritual of prayer. And I think that's the Eastern part of my experience of Christianity, that the ritual actually gives you something. But also, this time in these words, I actually found real solace. So that happened a long time ago, Andrew, but I think the germ of this book goes back to that encounter that I had, or those two encounters with Paul, right? And trying to work out what does Paul mean and what does Christianity mean for me? I'm not a Christian, you know. One of the real struggles with writing this book was that the first two drafts were really, they were going nowhere because I thought I had to be faithful to the mythology around Christianity, which includes, you know, that the physical resurrected body of Jesus met Paul on the road to Damascus. Mm. It was only with the third draft I realized I'm doing something else. I'm trying to understand what these ideas meant and how they could shake the world. Yeah. And they have shaken the world. And they've shaken me. There's so much to say, so forgive me for just kind of going on for a bit.
Not at all.
A lot of people, when I said, you know, because I've been working for 5 years on this novel, have said, when they have asked me what I'm working on, they said, oh, and I've explained, I'm doing a story about Paul, St. Paul. They look at me quizzically and go, that's so different to your other novels. I don't actually think it is so different, really, because I think the question of faith has been has preoccupied me for a long time. I mean, my second book was called Jesus Man. And if I had a road to Damascus moment, it was in my early 20s when I... Because what happened is after I gave up faith in a God, I took up a faith in something called... small C communism, socialism. And I then in my early 20s was in Eastern Europe straight after the fall of communism and engaging seriously with people who had experienced life under communist regimes, particularly in what was then Czechoslovakia, but also what was then the former Yugoslavia. I found I had to do another reckoning with faith. And that the ideas that I had committed to had also led to massive tragedies and massive suffering for so many people. But I don't believe that nullifies the ideas. So the Damascus, the novel, is an attempt to work out what is it in the Christian ethics that shouldn't be nullified, that are really important and really speak to the world today.
I think you've touched on this, but I want to go into it a little bit more, because I didn't see this as such a huge departure. Topic-wise, yes, from novels like The Slap and Barracuda, but content and message, I saw what things that you were trying to do. And look, I learned a while back that your writing evokes an emotional response in me, so I don't flinch from that. I can't approach your work with any sort of cool rationality. And as I read, I was grateful for the scholarship that you've put into this book, but I also found it raised questions for me of the religious teachings that I'd learned as a child, of church that I no longer follow. I started to think of all the others who would pick up Damascus with their various histories. And if this isn't an incongruous question, for a reader approaching Damascus, do you see it as a religious or a secular story?
Oh, that's, you know, that question makes me realise I didn't actually, I didn't really answer your first question about why are these stories, these myths, still current.
They may be questions that are answered in the reading for people.
Yeah, I mean that's what you hope. I do. I mean, this novel is set 2,000 years ago, but I hope that it's like a call and response, you know, in that the gospel tradition, that you can't help but think about what is happening in the contemporary world as you're reading it, and that's what. So, in terms of that first question, I just think it's because. Something like the words uttered 2,000 years by whoever this prophet Jesus was, that you will love the stranger as much as you love your blood relation. That's still a radical thought, and it still has incredible implications for how we live in the world now. Think about what Australia is doing to the stranger or the refugee. But, you know, it's not only an Australian question, and I think that's why these ideas these questions are still being asked, where people are still being challenged by it. In terms of the second part, one of the greatest experiences of the last 5 years is that I've become a student for the first time in my life, right? And my partner Wayne reminded me of this the other night, because talking to writers, that anxiety that comes when you put something that has belonged to you for this a number of years and you put it out in the world. You know, it's a strange place to be. And Wayne said, don't forget what you've learned through writing Damascus. And what I learned, I mean, I did a year of research before I even put pen to paper. And I learned that there were so many different currents to early Christianity. That I learned that there were so many aspects of Judaic religion that I didn't know enough and know about, and how much they influence what we know now as Christianity. I learned about so much suffering in the ancient world that you don't read when you read the great classics of Greek and Roman philosophy or politics, because they didn't give a fuck. Can I swear?
Yeah,
they didn't give a fuck about the slave. And that's why I think all those. That study was incredibly transformative. I think it's transformative, Andrew. I feel like for the first time in my life, I've been a real student. I used to be a student in my 20s at university, but I wasn't a good student. I was good at the extracurricular stuff, but I wasn't a real student. I feel like I have become, I've begun to be a student of a certain. Of ideas in the world, and that's been, and Wayne's right, I think I want to carry with that in me, regardless of what happens.
You are on 2SER 107.3. My name's Andrew Popel, and this is Final Draft. Right there, you heard from Christos Tsolkas. He and I were discussing his new novel, Damascus. Now, it is such a fantastic and wide-ranging book. When Christos came into the studio, we spoke for... well, quite a long time, discussing the incredible story that he's crafted, the history that he has helped to discover, and the philosophy and ideas that he engages with. So much so that, I mean, I didn't want you to miss out on any of our conversation, but of course, often these conversations run longer than the show allows. And I did also want to share Anna Crean's Act of Grace, which is coming up next. So I have split my interview with Christos into two parts, and I will be sharing the second part of Christos Tsolkas' Damascus with you on next week's show. Of course, you can also podcast. If you go to the Great Conversations podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, the opportunity is there for you to have more of a listen to Christos Tsolkas. Now, you are on 2SER 107.3, and I really hope you are enjoying discovering new books, writing, and literary culture. As I mentioned before, I have got Anna Crean's Act of Grace coming up. It is such a packed day full of books. You know when you get that pile? For me, it's on my bedside table, that pile of books. Today's show feels like that, just so much that you want to get to and so much that it gives to you. So I will be coming up with Anna Crean after this short break.
Darling Square Library, an exciting new hub for learning, innovation and creativity, is now open, right next to Haymarket and Darling Harbour. Bring your ideas to life in the makerspace with hands-on workshops led by experienced makers in 3D design and printing, electronics and prototyping. Plus, borrow from a massive collection of books, films, robotic kits and retro video game consoles. Library membership is free if you live in New South Wales. Visit cityofsydney.nsw.gov.au/library. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3 and you are listening to Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel and I'm joined in the studio by Anna Crean. Anna is the author of the award-winning Night Games and Into the Woods, amongst many other titles. And today, I am very fortunate she's joining me to discuss her first novel. It is called Act of Grace. Anna, welcome. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I confessed off air, I am still working through this novel. I loved it, but it feels like the sort of novel that love, like there's so many complex emotions going on. I want to tell people about it. Act of Grace, it entwines the stories of Robbie, Jerry and Nassim, taking us from their early lives into the present. Jerry grows up in fear of his father, Tui, a returned veteran who raises Jerry with a heavy hand. Robbie must confront her own identity when the onset of her father Danny's dementia means that he no longer recognises his family. And Nassim grows up in Saddam Hussein's Iraq and attracts the attention of not only the dictator, but his cruel, psychotic son. I am entranced by this novel. It's been one of those reading experiences. It's still with me. I'm very fortunate to have you here to help me process some of these thoughts. And I want to start with your three. This is a character-rich novel, and it seems unfair to just pick out Robbie, Jerry and Nassim, but they are very much the threads that bring the novel together. They're very distinct characters, and the early chapters of the book are quite contained. Each character also represents these vastly different world views and experiences. Did they all begin for you in the same narrative space?
Well, in a way, they began with Tui, who you haven't mentioned, who was Jerry's father, who was the returned soldier. And I guess originally when I, you know, decided, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to follow the novel, I was just thinking about him and I became obsessed with Iraq and reading and researching all about our time in Iraq during the Iraq War. And that, I was only ever doing that with the intention of writing him up as a character. But then I had this really strange few weeks in my study where suddenly I was in Baghdad, writing Baghdad and writing this Iraqi character. And then Saddam Hussein became a character. And I really wasn't expecting that because I think part of me was still thinking like a journalist, like you do all your research, but you can't really write about where you haven't been. And then when I started to develop Nassim as a character and write about her time in Baghdad, then her flight through to Syria, I realised the huge leap that you can make with fiction that you can't do with non-fiction.
So what was that research like and what was that leap moment for you? Because, of course, I guess as readers we understand that not only can we make that leap, we rely on authors to do that for us. That's the power of literature. But what was it like for you realizing that you could do that?
It was incredibly liberating. It was fun. And it was about trusting my impulses. Journalism really took a front sort of seat for me for so long. I always loved fiction, but journalism got all the green lights. And so when I did finally decide, okay, it's time to work on a piece of fiction, I felt like I sat in my study and found my fiction muscle really, really overweight, really flabby, really unfit. And I was like, oh my God, I have to exercise this muscle because it's just been so neglected. So I think for a year or two, I was just pushing and prodding and trying to understand it again and how to trust the path I was going to go on. And so my original process was very much like how I would approach journalism, which was just pure and utter intense research and absorption into a world. But then the process of typing was quite different.
Can you think back, or have you gone back to those earlier drafts? Does Nassim look different as a character before you had that freeing, that liberating moment?
Nassim was never a character.
She was never a character. So you were in Baghdad, and it wasn't really populated in the way that it is now populated in Act of Grace.
Very much so. I would never, when I sat down to write this, that was never part of the deal.
Wow.
Nassim was not meant to be part of it.
All of your protagonists, they have a legacy of these strong parental figures whose influence forces them to both confront, but it also complicates their present. And so I thought, let's start with Nassim. And I'm going to just note that I'm really unnaturally kind of teasing out narrative threads that are actually woven together in Act of Grace. In just a way that just I loved. I can't tell everyone to go out and read the book, but so we have Nassim. Her mother is a lauded progressive poet under a regime that tolerates no dissidents.
That's right.
Her commitment to feeling her art often leaves Nassim feeling somewhat inadequate, and this is constantly reflected back in Nassim's piano playing, which she is virtuoso, but is criticised by her mother for not having feeling. Nassim also attracts the favour of a ruthless dictator's son who horrifically abuses her. I don't think there are any words that I can use to kind of describe that. And probably even for yourself, that would have been difficult to approach with words, knowing the reality of that. As you travelled with Nassim, though, did you get a sense of which of these was hardest for her to reconcile? And how did you approach that?
I think for Nassim, a large part of her struggle was, being in the shadow of her extraordinary mother, an accomplished poet, but also the knowledge that her mother chose art over everything. Mm. Her mother chose art over family, over her own life, over her. Over Nassim's life, she put all their family in jeopardy by choosing art and truth-telling through poetry.
I did want to look at Robbie. We've given short shrift to Robbie so far. She's perhaps one of my perhaps my favourite character. I think I enjoyed following her story the most. So her father, Danny, he has, at a very early part in the story, he has his Indigenous heritage forced upon him by a teacher at the school where he works, someone who, I guess, to a lot of the country, you know, looks like a bit of a white hat, liberal, best intentioned. And you do complicate, again, a clean relationship that we have with this teacher. But he hasn't chosen to seek this out. Then when he's in the home following the onset of dementia, he is reunited with his mother's family in a way that sort of almost he cruelly may never actually get to know them because of the dementia that he's experiencing. And how does Danny's story, though, because it was very hard going alongside Danny and his story, and how does that impact Robbie, though, and the decisions she makes? Because she then goes on to become an artist, to engage across Australia with different people.
Yeah. Robbie is interesting because, as same with her father, in the sense that they are grappling with these very different ideas of what it might mean to be Indigenous, in a way, having blood versus having culture. And Danny had no culture. And so Robbie is grappling with who she might be and what people would see her as. And her father, very early on, before dementia kicks in, warns her to say that she's Italian, to not even bother going there, because the clothing of identity that people will keep trying to put on her just won't fit. But as she is a feisty personality, she's an artist, and artists are seekers, and they're constantly seeking out identity. They're constantly trying to make patterns of stories and to evoke them in a certain way. So she doesn't say she's Italian, but she doesn't say she's Indigenous either. Mm. She is... she's grappling with the history of the country and where she might fit in it.
I want to get to Tui, and I wondered how far empathy can extend. What can I judge outside my own life experience, which is something we were just touching on? Mm. Tui in particular, he troubled me because his story is potted with its own tragedy. Mm. And undoubtedly, he, as a young man, went and tried to do something that he believed was noble, that he believed was brave, that he believed was good. But his attitude is also repugnant. Mm. He is the sort of person that you would have to take on, except you would probably be afraid of him. And I wondered, though, is that him or is that me? did you want your characters to complicate the reader's sensibility in this way?
Well, Tui is almost representative of almost all my journalism, in the sense that you often meet subjects whose behaviour is reprehensible, but you can't help but have empathy and a sense of insight into them, who they are and how they came to be who they are, and sometimes even communicate and connect with someone. You might be talking to some. I've spoken to prisoners who have done horrible things, and sometimes end up having a joke with them, or a little connection, or a little chuckle. And I feel like Tui is that. I also feel incredibly sad for him. He's a man that is so knotted in fury and so completely barricaded from the people around him. He makes life a nightmare for his son. He makes life a nightmare for his wife, but he is actually in the nightmare. Mm. It doesn't stop for him. And sometimes I feel sometimes that people are really punitive towards that people can be horrible, and often with mental illness, it's not a pretty thing. People can behave incredibly badly, can be nasty pieces of work. But I do think that sometimes it's important for us to remember that whilst we may brush against them and get a taste of that horror and that nightmare, it is important to remember that person who is sick, who's actually sick, can't ever get out of that nightmare. And I feel like that's what Tui is.
Mm. I'm speaking with Anna Crean. We are discussing Act of Grace. And I hope I have instilled on you, the listener, just some of the wonder and some of the discovery that I got from my reading of this. Anna, thank you so much for coming in and helping me work through my reading of this. If only we could all be so fortunate.
Thank you, Andrew.
Newtown Festival returns to light up the biggest party in the Inner West. A day packed full of local talent with loads of great live music, food, art and entertainment for the whole family. As the main fundraiser for Newtown Neighbourhood Centre, your generous contributions at the gate go towards helping the team support the vulnerable and at-risk members of the local community. Newtown Festival, Sunday, November 10 at Camperdown Memorial Rest Park. More info at newtownfestival.org. 2SER sponsors. Yes, yes, you are tuned to 2SER 107.3. It is Final Draft for but a few minutes longer. My name is Andrew Popel. Thank you for joining me. I want to also thank my guests today. Christos Tsolkas was discussing his new novel, Damascus. Also, we had Anna Crean joining us to discuss Act of Grace. Thank you to both of them. And if you would like to hear more of those conversations, if you want to discover more about either of those books, why not join us on the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find long-form interviews with the authors that I speak to, discover more about the books they love, read along, start a book club. You can have the writer there alongside you, helping you, guiding you through the text. I will be back next week with more Final Draft, so don't go anywhere. Join me on the podcast. Join me... wherever. Join me on social media. I would love to hear from you at Final Draft 2SER. My name is Andrew Popel. It is time for me to say goodbye. So thank you once again. Until next week, happy reading.